Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Thank you.
Wow, Angela Johnson crying over you here live on Rainbow Soul. Angela Johnson, welcome to the program.
Hey, Neil, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thank you for stopping by. And you have to tell me, before we even get into the interview, what was the motivation behind Crying Over You? Because I absolutely positively love that track. I mean, we feature that track all the time on Music Massage. Tell the audience a little bit about that track.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, I have to admit that that was just a song that kind of was just sitting somewhere in my head, and it just kind of flowed really easily. When I had the music put down, the lyrics kind of just came to me, and it was very reminiscent and very influenced by Donny Hathaway and all the artists like him. And it was just that kind of song that, you know, people have been through it at one point or another. And I heard it all together in my head before, it was written down on paper, that I heard the horns. I wanted that New Orleans kind of horn background. And then I also had, you know, the keys where, you know, the organ, you know, Billy Preston was also influencing me during this song. And Donny Hathaway, like I mentioned before. But it was just a mess of things in my head, and I just had to put it down. But I also have to mention that I recorded this song again because we've gotten such a crazy response from this song that I put it on A Woman's Touch, Volume 1, and I featured some singers that I had been working with for a long time that sometimes sing backgrounds for me, Nathalie Sala, Beatty, and Trisha Angus, and they sound terrific on that version as well. So I had a lot of fun putting that song together.
Yeah, I absolutely positively love that track. You know what, Angela, let's start from the beginning. I love to do this with the guests that we have on so that the audience can get an opportunity to learn about you. You know, they can check you out on the internet and all kinds of things like that. But it's just so nice when we hear the artists, you know, kind of tell their own story. So let's start from the beginning. Where did you grow up? And obviously, how did you get started in the music industry?
Yes, well, I grew up in a, you know, decent-sized city. It's not too small and not too big, but Utica, New York, which is upstate, more central New York, very close to Syracuse, somewhere in between Syracuse and Albany, New York. And I grew up there in a very, you know, strong Christian household. My mother was the daughter of a preacher, and she, on that side of the family, had 13 brothers and sisters. And then on my father's side, he grew up in a very strong Christian household as well, and he had about 15 children on that side. So
wow,
I had a lot of
wow.
aunts and uncles who sang and played instruments, especially on my mother's side. They were always into the church and always, you know, playing secular music as well. So I had a balance of both. And it was kind of inevitable for me to come up the way that I did. But my parents definitely were, you know, encouraging me from the very beginning. I started playing the piano at the age of 4, somewhere between 3 and 4. And I was just banging on the piano. My mother started to notice that I was actually picking out tunes. And she kept encouraging me that she would sit a tape recorder right in front of me with a mic. It was a detached mic. And she would sit there and just let me run for hours and hours, and I would stay at the piano just coming up with songs and chords and lyrics. I don't know what I was saying, but I was saying about I was talking about the blues at the age of 4, which is really funny. But she encouraged me and constantly had me sit at the table, or not at the table, but at the piano, and just singing, you know, church music as well as, you know, just coming up with the blues. And my father would always try to get me to play in front of my aunts and uncles whenever they come into the household and, you know, say, aunt, you know, play such and such song, and then I'll go off at the piano, and then they just sit there and laugh and, you know, teasing, but in a good way, because they loved and were just in amazement at what I was doing at such a young age. But I started to, you know, really get serious about it, and by the age of 7, I started to take piano lessons, classical piano lessons. And then by the age of 9, I took up the violin. So I got my theory from, you know, being in school, in elementary school, and I took my knowledge of, you know, playing the violin into college. So I studied for 4 years at State University of New York at Purchase College, which is like Westchester County. And I knew when I graduated from high school that I wanted to be close to New York. I felt that that's where I needed to be to really start off my career in this music business. And so from there, I had bumped into this crazy nut of a drummer, and as well as a singer and songwriter by the name of Christian Yurick, who was, you know, in the same music department with me, but as a, you know, drummer major. And we were both joining a gospel choir on campus. So we kind of got to know each other, and I knew that he had written songs, and, you know, I loved the way that he played drums and sang. And so we decided to do some, you know, some singing together, and he had a few songs that he wanted me to record for him. And that's pretty much how Cooley's Hot Box began developing as a band. The keyboardist, Victor Axelrod, as well as the percussionist, Ernesto Abreu, came together with me in this group, and we formed Cooley's Hot Box and started gigging on campus and in local areas of Westchester County. And, you know, there's a lot of hole in the walls that we played in, a lot of craziness. I can talk for days about my experiences being on the road with them. But we started to venture out and playing into New York City, you know, especially in Manhattan. And we started to, you know, get the word around, you know, about this band that we have, this crazy drummer and, you know, this black lead singer, and then, you know, just a wide range of nationalities in this group, and coming together and playing soul music. And a lot of people said that we were reminiscent of, you know, Rufus and Chaka Khan, Earth, Wind, and Fire, you know, that kind of sound. So we started to really test the waters, and the word got around so much that, you know, a lot of interest came from major labels, and we did take on a couple of major label deals, and it worked out for a little while, but, you know, I can go into it. It wasn't a situation that was best for us. So we eventually, I'm trying to give you the short end of my career, but eventually we found a way to be able to put out our music as Cooley's Hot Box without major deals. And right along with, you know, working with Cooley's Hot Box, I always felt the need that I had to say something else. I had something else to say, and I had a way of singing that was slightly different from what I do with Cooley's Hot Box. And so I ventured to put a single together called Ordinary Things, and we kind of test the waters with that song. And it went number one at a D.C. station, WHUR, if you're familiar with that. And I was ecstatic with the success of that single. So after that, I decided to, you know, put together an album, and, you know, why not make it something that's really mine, and that's just all done by me. Whether, you know, it's being in the studio, producing it, arranging it, everything was done, you know, within my power. And so I put out the very first album, They Don't Know, back in 2002, 2003, I believe. And we had a lot of success with that album. So I started to feel a little bit more comfortable, and I put out my second solo project called Got to Let It Go. But right along with that, I also put out another album with Cooley's Hot Box called Don't Be Afraid, Get On, which, you know, was also a successful album as well. And then, okay, so I felt comfortable enough about me being in the studio. You know, people heard my voice, but I wanted to get a chance to work with some other folks in the indie business who I had a lot of respect for. And this was my chance to really do some collaborating, some serious collaborating. So I put out this album called A Woman's Touch, Volume 1. And it gave me the chance to work with some greats in the indie scene, such as Eric Roberson, Mesa Leek, Rasan Patterson, Gordon Chambers. I'm going down the list. There's quite a few people, heavy hitters on this album, Frank McCombs. And I had to make a statement with this album because, you know, folks heard me as a solo artist but not as a producer and an arranger, and I wanted them to see me in this light. So we had a lot of success with that album. And so after I tested the waters with, you know, being the producer, I felt like I had something else to say, and I wanted to kind of step up the tempo a bit. And that's how my latest album, It's Personal, came about. I wanted to dance more often with my music, and I also wanted to kind of give people an inside look at what my life is as a producer, singer, songwriter, arranger, mother, wife, daughter. So it really kind of explains my life and the craziness that I go through every day, the day in the life of an indie scene artist, I should say. But that's the shorter version of my life and my career, if I could say that.
Yeah, no, it's a wonderful story. And what I'd like you to talk a little bit more about, because, you know, a lot of the people out there listening are artists on their way trying to get into the industry and, you know, trying to learn how to be successful. What is the journey like for an artist, a quote-unquote independent artist? You know, tell the audience a little bit about what that journey, quote-unquote struggle, what that experience is all about being an independent artist out here these days.
Yes. You know, struggle is definitely the the title of my life. But, you know, it's a good kind of struggle. I mean, it's, you know, the wonderful thing about being an indie artist is that, you know, the power is really in your hands, and the people that you choose to surround yourself with that are helping you within your career, you have the choice of putting those people in place to make you, or to take your career to the next level. So that was key for me. I have my husband, who is also my manager, and I also have a very good friend of mine, George Littlejohn, who has helped me to take my career on and on and on and extending it for this long. But I have to say that everything that you are putting out, you know, comes right back to you. So that's another beautiful thing about being an indie artist. But, of course, everything is out of your pockets, no one else's. And
right,
a lot of people,
right.
that's a hard pill to swallow for some folks. You know, I know it's lovely when you sign a contract and then you're given monies, you know, before you make your first album or your first record or song. And, yeah, that's lovely, but guess what? You got to pay that back, you know. You have to pay the record
right.
company as well. So it's not an easy thing for folks to understand. People who are definitely green, and that they see, you know, the highlights of being an artist and being able to tour and do all those things. It's a lot of hard work, but if you are in it, not just for the money, but for it to extend yourself in your life as a you know, an artist, then, you know, go for it. I truly believe in trying to put out the music yourself rather than trying to go through another label. You know, this is something that you are able to learn each and every step in this business and knowing all the aspects of the business by hand and, you know, in first person rather than somebody trying to, you know, do it for you. I mean, you need that. You definitely need to know what you're getting into and what you do. I mean, I'm just saying that you need to know about the business. You definitely need to know how to deal with certain folks in the business because it is a very shady business as well. And you also, which is most important, surround the people or surround yourself with people who do believe in you and believe in what you're doing and also who are very honest with you.
Absolutely. Now, what is the distribution process like for an independent artist? I know you are with the Purpose Music Group, but talk a little bit about how, you know, as an independent artist, you get your music heard out there.
Yes, well, you know, I do, you know, have Purpose Records as a staple for distributing my music, but we do make distribution deals with folks outside of our company. Like, I have a distribution deal in the U.K., for that territory, which also covers South Africa. And then I also have a distribution deal in Japan, which takes care of that territory as well as the Asian countries as well. And so we've done it in Australia. So we kind of, you know, are on, you know, hands-on with our distribution. But it's a better deal for us, and it depends on the artist and how they want to do with, you know, deal with, you know, folks from across the seas as well as here in the States. But for me, this has been a wonderful deal because we have different deals for each territory, and we deal with them accordingly. But folks should definitely look into getting information on who's doing what in the business as far as distributing and knowing who is dealing with your genre of music. You don't want to go to a situation where they're only dealing with rock music and you want them to deal with R&B music of yours. It's probably not the best choice because they are not exactly sure who to deal with. And, I mean, it's quite a bit. I mean, I definitely suggest folks to pick up a book and to really learn about what goes on within the distribution world and to also know exactly who's who in the business.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you talked about some of your foreign distribution deals. Do you perform overseas quite often, or, you know, are you performing in those territories that you have deals with?
Most definitely, especially in the UK as well as in Japan. My very first trip was all the way in Scotland, which I've done some wonderful work with some folks out there. But when you are, you know, when you put your music out in a territory, you definitely want to go over there to support that music because people want to see you, you know, live. They want to see what you're really all about. You know, having a studio record is definitely different from having a live show, and I think it's the package that really sells and promotes your record as well. But it's really a wonderful thing that I can go overseas and see folks and talk to folks face-to-face about what I do and what I'm all about as an artist as well as a, you know, a person. But that's most definitely, folks, if you have a chance to go overseas and perform, it, I think it's the best experience whatsoever. It has definitely had me grow as an artist as well as an individual. And I have to admit that overseas I've been giving, or I have been given a lot of love. I mean, it's just different as far as the reciprocation of soul music, especially in the UK and in Japan, because, you know, it wasn't born there. It was born here in the States, and they appreciate it on a greater level over there. And that's a whole other conversation. But it is a beautiful thing, and that I do believe I can play there forever, and they'll never get tired of me. So it's a wonderful thing, but it's on a whole other level, the appreciation for soul music and R&B music. They really do understand the music. And I'm hoping that it will come back and surface here in the United States, where it's just not what you're hearing on, you know, popular radio today, but the kind of music that's very, you know, moving and soul-stirring. I mean, we're missing that on radio today. And, you know, thank goodness for you and for many of you know, the companies like yours and internet stations to support the kind of music that we do. And I hope that it would surface in a more popular way where people can hear it, because I feel I'm just going on and on, but it's really a passionate subject about for me, where, you know, our children are not having access to, you know, soul music, if I can speak alone about that, as much as we would like for them to. You know, they're missing all the elements of where we came from, because our parents brought us up on some great music, but they're not hearing it today. So I do the best that I can for my daughter to know exactly where my music is coming from and where our history is and where our culture is. And, you know, it's really important for we as, you know, this generation to pass it on to the next generation.
I agree. And you know, I was just having a conversation with someone the other day. You know, we were talking about some people, you know, that we saw in the BET Awards. And, you know, the bottom line is, you know, the truth of the matter, this is not any disrespect to anybody, the majority of those artists we're not going to be listening to 20 years from now, okay? You know, when we saw Patti LaBelle come out there and do her thing, you know, she's had a 50-year career.
Yes.
You know, it's just an incredible thing. And why is that? It's because of the music. It's because of the roots of the music. It's because of the lyrics. It's because she's really singing. You know,
yes.
there's no auto-tune. There's none of that other stuff going on. And then I appreciate soul music, you know?
Absolutely. And, you know, she has grown into what she has become. And, you know, a lot of folks are just thrown out there, you know, not having any idea what to do on stage, or, you know, or they're just mimicking somebody else, and they have, like, several or thousands of artists that are all sounding the same, which is a whole other subject. But, you know, I do believe that, you know, I've definitely, you know, paved my own way as far as, you know, learning from the people that have come before me, studying them. And I'm still doing that today. I'm still a fan of music. But, you know, many artists such as Patti LaBelle, you know, Marvin Gaye, Michael Jackson, Stevie Wonder. I mean, those folks have learned from grassroots how to do exactly what they have done. And, you know, they have put in the work, and they have been in the studios rehearsing until they got it perfect, and then recording things until it became perfect. And there wasn't no, you know, 5-6 takes. It was like maybe 100 takes until they got it right.
Right.
Because they didn't have so many tracks to put the music on in order, and they couldn't edit as much as they could like we can do it today. And, of course, you know, there was no auto-tune, nothing like that. So they had to be perfect in the studio as well as on stage, and there was no fakeness about that. And that's what I really do appreciate about those artists. And there's not many that can say that they do that today. And I would hope that I'm bringing, you know, an inch of what they've done back then to my music, because, you know, I work hard at what I do, and there's just no fakeness about it. You know, what you hear on record is, you know, is what I am today, and I hope that people can appreciate that, you know, when I do perform it live, you know, mistakes and all. This is who I am, and I'm going to give you exactly what I'm feeling inside, and, I'll, you know, I hope that you can feel it too.
Oh, absolutely, and I've seen you perform. You know, you're an incredible performer. I mean, I can feel, you know, I just feel the vibe. You know, it's in your keyboard strokes. It's in your face. It's in
Thank
the
you.
Notes and the tones that come out. You know, it's the real deal. You know, and I've seen you predominantly in small venues, which I love the smaller venues. You know, like the Blue Notes. You know, those kind of places. For me, you get to feel the artist. You get to feel the music. Let me ask you this, because we're not about talking about the negative side of you know, venue, television show, and stuff like that. But since we are talking about real music and real singers and real artists, I'll phrase the question like this. Do you think that people, you know, the kids, I'm going to use the word kids, the young performers on, say, American Idol and some of these other reality shows, do you think that they are at a disadvantage being, you know, thrown to the top so quickly?
I do. Like I said before, folks who have come before me, they've worked hard to get to where they are, and they perfected their craft. Each time they were on stage, they were still rehearsing for the next big show to come, and they perfected and corrected whatever mistakes they had made before until they got it right. And, you know, folks who are, you know, young people that are on these shows such as American Idol, you know, I mean, maybe they have put in some of the work, you know, some have started very early on where they were doing talent shows, which is cool because that's also where I came from as well. But to be, you know, in a situation where, you know, like such as Motown, where they groomed their artists, they made them exactly what they were on stage because they worked with them, and they constantly, from the dancing, from every step that they made, from every vocal production that they've, or coaching that they've received, it made them exactly what they are today, and I do believe that they're not getting that on these particular shows. I mean, yes, they're preparing for each week, you know, for each performance that they have to make, but I don't think that it's enough. I mean, some people have the natural talent where they're able to come off like that, but I do believe that it's all about the song as well. I mean, I'm not hearing any music that I can hear 20 years from now as his,
right.
I mean, I truly believe it's all about the song, and I have not heard that on these. You know, on American Idol, they're always singing classics. There's nothing new that they're singing until, like, towards the end of the shows where, you know, they want to flex, you know, and sing like Rihanna or, you know, Beyonce. But, you know, they're not singing, they go back to the classics. That's where they started from, because they know that these were great songs, and these also gave, you know, the energy and the wit and the time and effortlessness that they needed to do when they're performing these songs, they had that within those songs, those classic songs, because those songs were great songs. Anyway, they didn't have to work that hard at it. All they had to do is just flex their skills as vocalists, because the songs were already beautiful within themselves. But when they're singing new songs and giving new songs for these, I want to say children, but I'm not that old. But when they're giving these songs to sing on these particular shows, you know, they're still not hits. You're going to forget about them in the next couple of years. And then, you know, their success continues on, you know, these fast-paced types of songs. And, you know, they really don't meet or do anything for me. I mean, you know, there are a few songs that do reach that point, but I don't feel like songs are being written that way anymore, especially in R&B and soul music. It's all about production, which is sad to say.
Yeah.
And, I think that, you know, these vocalists and artists that are coming out today from these particular shows won't last much longer if the songs aren't as strong. And that's really what I'm trying to say.
and you said it, you know, very clearly and very eloquently. I mean, it's about money. I mean, it's a money-driven venue. But, you know, I think, you know, for someone like myself, someone like yourself who's really into music, you know, and loves, you know, the lyric and you know, the instruments that are being played. And, you know, on top of that, of course, the whole production and the whole show, you know, it's just, you know, certain things are lacking. I mean, that's why I opened up the show with Crying Over You, because the lyrics, the voice, the tone, all of that, that is a track that we can listen to 20 years from now. You know, the lyrics are there. People can, you know, relate to that. Everyone's been through what you're singing through in that song, you know.
Right, right.
If you reached a certain age, and that's where, you know, the beautiful music, you know, actually comes from. Time has gone by so fast. We're 31 minutes after the hour of 10
on
the East Coast.
Okay.
Yeah, and I want to get in a couple more of your tracks. But, you know, before we move on with some of the other questions, you did mention your family, and you had a large extended family. Just talk real quickly, you know, about your mom and your father, you know, how they actually influenced and impacted your singing career.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. My parents were definitely huge supporters of my music from day one. Bless her. My mother passed away in 2004. But she definitely encouraged me to play the piano and to sing and play in church and to really be myself. That was what she stressed most importantly about, not trying to sound like anyone else, but be yourself. You know, we have enough of whoever is out there already. Just be you, and people will appreciate you for that. And my father, who also sings, you know, and he loves to do karaoke these days. So he's karaoke king,
so cool,
back in Utica, New York. But he's crazy. You know, he brought the funk and soul and R&B in my household, and that's what he exposed me to. And then my mother had more of the pop, and then, of course, the gospel. And she also enforced that I learn classical as well. So I had, from both sides, my parents just encouraging me to explore all kinds of music. And, you know, they truly believe that, you know, I should be myself, and to also just, you know, I don't know how to stress this, but to the artists that are listening, we have so many people that are sounding alike, and, you know, I know that I don't particularly sound alike like anybody, and that bothered me for a while early in my career. I didn't think that I had a gritty enough sound in my voice, or, you know, I didn't sound like so-and-so, you know, so I'm thinking that maybe I stand out too much. But then again, that works for me, and I guess it sets me apart from the rest, and my parents definitely encouraged that I just stand on my own and sound like me, like Angela, you know, Bowens at the time. And I can't stress that enough for all other folks and other artists that are coming up, to not try to sound like someone else, because there's enough of those people that are around out there sounding alike. And I really
Absolutely.
Do feel that, you know, we all have something to give and something special within each of us and our own sound, and that there's enough room at the top. And I just want people
yeah.
to know that
yeah.
for sure.
Yeah, and the reason why I brought up your parents is because, you know, the way things, I mean, even my children, you know, they're a part of, you know, single parent households, because I'm a divorced parent. So I just wanted you, you know, to bring out that, you know, you came from a family where, you know, your mom and your father were there for you, because I think that's important. And for folks to believe it or not, it still exists. You know,
oh, yes.
there are
yes.
two parent households out there, you know?
Of course. And, you know, most of the time it was my mother around, because my father was constantly, you know, busy working. But my mother
sure,
was always
sure.
there. She was definitely, you know, the foundation for me, because she also played piano too, and I was trying to imitate her. And
wow.
You know, she, you know, really did encourage me, and she knew that I had something special, and that's why she bought that tape recorder, not really knowing how to operate it, but she knew how to press record and play and have me sit there for hours at the piano
wow.
just coming
wow.
up with songs. And I even put little clips of that on my very first album, They Don't Know, of my mother taping me and asking me questions so people could actually believe that I was, you know, at the age that I was, playing piano and singing and writing songs so early. But, you know, I really thank God for my parents, because they brought me up on great music. They didn't, you know, they weren't into the pop stuff back then. I kind of caught on to that, you know, when the 80s flew in, and I was such an 80s girl back then. But my parents definitely gave me the foundation of good quality music. They knew what was real and what was not, and they enforced it in our household, you know, what was tasteful and what was not. And so I thank God for that. And I think
and it's definitely paid off for you. Talk to us real quick, because it is about the emotion. It's who, you know, it's what makes you as a person. As an example, you know, talk about the passing of your mom and how that's affected your life and how it's influenced your music, you know, from that point on.
Yeah, I mean, my mother passed away in 2004, like I mentioned, and it was the same year that my daughter was born. My daughter was born in January, and I lost my mother in May. So it was a roller coaster of emotions, but my mother was, you know, in that transition that year where I didn't want to face it, but I knew that she was dying. And this was a long battle. It was over 2 decades, almost 3, of cancer, just fighting cancer. And so, you know, as emotional as I was, and also I was creating the second album, the Coolies Hotbox album, Don't Be Afraid, Get On. So I was under quite a bit of stress at that time and just not really knowing how to place, you know, or where to place all of those emotions except through my music.
Yeah.
And, you know, thank God, you know, my mother was able to spend some time with my daughter before she passed. And then
nice.
She was able
yeah.
to see, you know, her firstborn have her firstborn, you know. That was really special to me, and I believe that God made that happen within that time period just so that I could live with that kind of peace in my mind. But it was a very difficult thing for me. You know, losing a parent is not an easy task, and I wouldn't wish it on my biggest enemy. And, you know, I still deal with it every day. You know, when I feel like I need her most, you know, I can't talk to her, you know, and I don't have anyone else to take that place because, you know, you can't replace a parent in your household. And so she was a huge influence in my music, and I've wrote many songs about her. You know, on my very first album, I wrote the song Call because, you know, she was going through a lot, and I wanted her to know that I was always there for her no matter what she was going through. And then in the second album, I've wrote many things, especially about, you know, her preparing for her to leave this world. And, you know, I wrote this song named Afterlife. And she was really encouraged and just getting ready to face, you know, the last moments of her life. And then after she had gone, you know, I wrote a song that's very dear to me, and it's called Hurts Like Hell, which is on the current album, because it's a very painful experience. And I will never get over it. You know, that's just a very hard transitioning for me, as well as, you know, for anyone else who was dealing with the death of a loved one. And, you know, my mother was my first love, so it was very difficult for me, but it helped me to grow and to be the best mother that I can be for my daughter, and that I can help her, you know, when that time comes for me, you know?
Yes, yes. And I know what that experience is like, because I've lost a mother as well. And I was talking to a friend, you know, where I was working a couple of years ago, and, you know, she was saying, you know, she was very hurt from, you know, the loss of her mom.
Mm-hmm.
And she said to me, you know, she says, Neil, you know, what has that experience been, you know, like for you? And I said to her, you know, point blank, I said, you never get over it.
You just don't. People will
tell you that, you know, with time, all things pass. But I said, you never get over it. And she said to me, you know, Neil, thank you for telling me that. Because okay. Everybody's telling me all this other crap about, you know, you're going to get over it and blah, blah. And you're the first person that was, you know, that was being real with me, you know, because that's how I feel, you know.
That's
the situation, you know.
That was the best answer that you could have given her, because, you know, that's real. And you just, you know, you just move on. You find a place for that hurt. You know what I mean? It doesn't go anywhere other than just in another part of your body. But
it
surfaces when something reminds you of your mother or your father or the loved one that you lost. You know, it surfaces and it comes out, you know, in different ways, in different places. But it never goes away. And that's somebody that was an integral part of your life, and you know, someone that was had to do with all of your upbringing in your very earliest and most impressionable years, you know. So I wrote the song Hurts Like Hell. Really, it's not a song of sadness that my mother is gone, but it's me accepting and now moving on and doing what I have to do to be strong for my daughter. And that, but it still hurts like hell. It still feels like as if it happened yesterday, but I can move on, and now I can let you go. And let you be free, because you've lived your life, and now Let Me Live Mine.
We're going to do that song right now. Angela Johnson, Hurts Like Hell.
Thank you.
Beautiful track, Angie. I really love that track.
Thank you so much.
Beautiful track. Now, would you consider yourself an emotional person?
Oh, my goodness. You should ask my husband that. I am very emotional. I am. I, with my music, I try to be very honest and pure and emotional with it. But it's just a part of me. It's really a part of, I would think that it's one of my major traits, that I'm a very emotional person when it comes to music, as well as dealing with people, and especially people that I care about.
Yeah, and it makes you real. That's the bottom line. I think that's what definitely translates through you, as an artist and with your music. Now, what instruments are you currently playing, on tour and on your projects? I know you do piano and you're singing. Are you playing anything else as well?
No, it's always been the keys. I have yet to bring out the fiddle, if I can call it that.
That's what I was trying to get at.
But no, and I've honestly had put it aside for a while, the violin, because I've been focusing more on production that I haven't had the time to really practice. And, I hope it is something that I will have time, especially when my daughter goes back to school, because she's out for the summer, that I can spend more time, playing around and getting the feel of playing the violin again. Because once you're out of practice, you lose a little bit of that finesse. And, I definitely lost a bit of it. But it's an instrument that I love, I truly love. But I do want to learn to play other instruments, and I really feel like I have the knack to pick up other, instruments such as, the guitar. And, I love percussion. I would love to play, the congas or bongos. And I have some friends in the business who can definitely teach me a thing or two. But I'm just a fan of music. The bass was something else that I also thought I can play, because I love to play synth, keyboard, bass. And it's just I want to be able to just grasp or at least get something of everything that I have grown to love and appreciate as a musician. Instruments, I love the fact of of seeing or hearing live instrumentation, especially on stage. It's just you can't replace the inflections, the emotion that a instrumentalist would put into their instrument. It's all the hard work that they practiced with and really tuned into the instrument and fell in love with the instrument to make it come alive on stage and in the studio. Folks, you cannot replace that. And I say this because, I do appreciate DJs. I do, and I love them to death, and I have many favorites. And they're playing their music. They're playing it off of the records. You can't have your music without the live instrumentation that's put on records. But, being in the studio and being able to play all the instruments on your synthesizer or your keyboard and being able to say, okay, here's the product. For me, I prefer having the mixture of both. I love to add live instrumentation to some of the work that I program within my music, and I think it's a beautiful combination, but nothing can take the place of having a person really play the instrument itself. There's just nothing that can replace it, I believe.
That's true. Absolutely. We're quickly running out of time, and I want you to talk about two people who I know are very, very special in your life. It's your husband, Russell, who I haven't seen in a minute, and your beautiful daughter. Talk a little bit about them and how they've impacted your life in recent years.
Yes. Well, my husband, Russell, we've been married for almost 18 years now.
Wow, congratulations.
September. Congratulations. Thank you so much. And, you're going to hear about me talking about him all over my current album, It's Personal. But really, through all of my albums, I've spoken mostly about my personal experience being a wife. And, you know, it's definitely come to head, you know, within the newest album, because it's being in a relationship for this long, you know, for most folks, they're just going to give up and just walk away from it. And it's not an easy thing. It's definitely not easy. And I'm sure, if I can speak for him, it's not easy living with a musician or an artist. I have my moments, many of them. And so it's a beautiful thing when you do have someone who really understands what you are and what you're trying to do, and who's also trying to help you elevate your career. And, you know, this is professionally and personally, and this is what my husband Russell has done. And I thank God for him. I mean, he's just really, he's been my right arm. I mean, I can't tell you how much he's done for me. And it's been really he and I working at this together. But folks, don't get it twisted, because I do the production. I do all the truck programming in my studio by myself, but the door is closed. But no, seriously, he's been just wonderful for me, and he's constantly coaching me and just, you know, making sure that I, you know, within this male dominant business, that I stand my ground as a woman and represent, because no one can speak for me but myself. And so he has been that for me, and I thank God for him. My daughter Mesa, I call her Little Mesa, and Mesa League is Big Mesa, so they know each other very well.
Oh,
and
wow.
They're so cute together. But my daughter Mesa, she's just wonderful. She has definitely influenced me to be, you know, a better mom. You know, I'm not perfect, trust me on that, and she reminds me of that every day, but she's constantly just keeping me up on my toes and keeping me in my chops when it comes to, you know, just doing the things that have to be done in the right way and in the best way that I can. And I hope that I have influenced her in a good way when it comes to that. But she's just wonderful. She is definitely into music. She rather than learning music theory and sitting at the piano learning notes and how to play the notes, she rather pressed the record button and give me the mic. So she wants to write songs. She's already written a few songs. I've actually recorded it in my iPhone, so we have to put it on CD. But she talks about making a record along with, you know, being a chef, along with, you know, being a taekwondo martial artist, because she does take that very seriously. But she's just a beautiful, beautiful soul. She's full of love, and she's vibrant, and she's very smart. And I just love her to death. So it's a beautiful thing to have this little girl in my life, in our lives.
Wow. It sounds like a beautiful thing. We are quickly running out of time. We have about 5 minutes of show left. As an independent artist, how are you using, you know, how are you responding to the new digital world? I know when you first started, you know, it was predominantly CDs. So just quickly tell me how you're dealing with the whole digital thing and how you are incorporating, if you are, social media and those types of things into your career.
Wow, I have come a long way since I've been in the business for so long. But from CDs to digital, it has been a wonderful, wonderful thing. I mean, now that I'm able to reach folks from all over the world, it is a beautiful thing to be able to have the access that I have as an independent artist. It's a wonderful thing. But I've been able to really promote myself in that way. If I can't go to tour in that area, I can constantly get online and reach folks that way. It's just been a very instrumental thing for many of us indie artists. And we use it to the best of our abilities. We have access to, you know, like I said, the distribution. We can take care of everything through digital. And it's a wonderful thing that we have people to come and find us online and to be able to find our music and learn more about us. But I can't stress enough how much it has increased, you know, the whereabouts of what I'm doing and also my business and my career, so that everything is at their fingertips and folks can get to know us within instant minutes. And it's just a beautiful thing for us as independent artists.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we might as well right now, while we're on the social media and that whole thing, tell the audience how they can reach you, give your email address, your Twitter account, your Facebook, however they can reach you. Let the audience know where they can find you.
Yes, well, of course, my website is www.angelajohnson.com. And then you can also find me on Facebook. I do have two pages because one is pretty much filled up. But both, you can reach me at angelajohnson.music. And then, of course, angelajohnson2TOO. And that's Facebook, okay. Then I got the Twitter account, which is angelajohnson_1. You can also find me at this wonderful website at soultracks.com, Reverb Nation, soulcommune.com. I mean, many, many ways to find about me and to find out, you know, what I'm doing next. And if I can also mention, I have some shows coming up within the local area on July 13th. I'm opening up for all my peoples, Kindred, the Family Soul at B.B. King's in New York. And that's on July 13th, I said. And, of course, NJ Pack, I'm going to be doing something on July 21st right here in Newark, New Jersey. And V Rich and Brown Baby Girl are going to be performing the same night with me. And, of course, in D.C., I'm coming up in October, the Capital Jazz Fest Super Cruise, which is going to be really exciting. It's going to be an amazing trip, amazing artists that are on this cruise with me as well. But, folks, like I said, you can definitely do a search just putting in my name. And I just wanted to give a shout-out to you, Neil, for supporting me for all these years. I really do appreciate that. And all of your listeners, you know, this is a beautiful thing when we can connect with each other and just talk about music and be really honest with each other, how we feel about, you know, the music industry these days. But folks need to know really what's going on. And for the artists that are out there, I you know, if they want to reach me and kind of, you know, dig in my head a little bit about the music business and how to, you know, to promote themselves as well, they can definitely reach me by any of these forms of media. So please, thank you so much for everything, and I hope that I can continue keep giving you music to play on your show, and I just wanted to say once again thank you.
Oh, you are welcome, and it's been our pleasure having your music to play and keeping your music in rotation here. We have 45 seconds left. I want to end out with either Better or Only One. You tell me which one you want to hear.
I'm going to call Better. Better is
Better.
Definitely
okay.
The one, yes.
Okay, we're going to play Better. I love that track as well. You've been listening to Neil Blake Online here on Rainbow Soul. My special guest tonight, Mrs. Angela Johnson, and we will definitely be having her back. Until
thank
next
you.
Time, keep your internet browser locked to BlakeRadio.com. You better believe it.